Greetings and welcome back to another ongoing series of Shurim and Daf Yomi. My name is Yitzchak Yat Shalom. We're now in Masechet Chulin Daf Pei Tet Amud Bet, about to begin our study of the seventh Perek, Perek Egid HaNasheh. And as you will see in this first Mishnah, we're following a pattern that was established in the fifth Perek, Otovet Beno. We saw it assumed again in the sixth Perek, Kisui Adam. And we'll see it again as the first Mishnah defines which animals and in which contexts this particular, in this case, prohibition, apply to. Gid HaNasheh is, of course, the prohibition to eat the sciatic nerve, which is at least associated with, if not caused by, the events with Yaakov on that mysterious night that's recorded in Sefer Bereishit, Perek Lamed Bet. And we will look at some of the very famous Agadot in the next podcast. But in the meantime, we'll get started. Gid HaNasheh Noeg Ba'aretz. It applies universally. Whether or not there's Beit Mikdash, Bechulin, Uva Mukdashin, even a Korban, you still have the prohibition of Gid HaNasheh, and that will be, that line, that little word will be the focus of most of our first discussion today. Unlike Kisui Adam, which only applies to Chaya, and unlike Otov Beno, that only applies to Beima, this applies to both. Be'arech shel yamin ve'arech shel smol, both right and left legs, the gid of each leg is asur. We will see that that is not a matter of consensus. It doesn't apply to birds, because the bird does not have a rounded socket where the gid goes in. And it applies to the to an embryo, meaning it applies in utero, as we've seen before. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, it does not. And Rabbi Yehuda also says that the chelev of the embryo is mutar. We get back to Chelev again. The Tabachim, meaning a Shochet, is not believed to say he had cut out the Gid HaNasheh. Corner of Meir Chacham say they are believed, and they are believed al Chelev. And in about the third podcast, or fourth, we will deal with what that last line means and where Chelev came from in this discussion. Okay, Mukdashin, Pshita. It's obvious that if an animal's hektesh, that Gid HaNasheh still applies. Because after all, Mishum da'akdashe pakale isur gid mine. You think just because you are makdish an animal, the isur of gid went away? Vechitema, this is one proposal. Yesh begidin menotein tam, as I pointed out in the introductory note to the Perek. There is a issue coursing throughout the Perek about whether gidin have any sort of a taste. So if you hold that gidim do have a taste, viati isur muktashin v'chayale isur gid, and the point of the Mishnah is that noig b'muktashin means that when you're makdish an animal, the isur of eating from hektesh that applies to this gid is added onto the isur gid, and that's the chiddush, because after all, eating muktashin will only apply to something that has some sort of taste, not just a piece of tendon. But then, if that's the case, hay muktashin noig begid mi baile, the language is inverted. It shouldn't be that gid is noig be muktashin, it means muktashin is noig begid. Ela kesavra in begid no tentan. Must be that our Tana holds that there is no taste there. Uva muktashin isur gid ika isur muktashin laika. So flip it. Noig be muktashin means that even though there is no prohibition qua eating muktashin when you eat the gid, there still is the prohibition of gid. Okay. But the only problem with that is v'savar tanan ein begidin no tentam. Is it possible that our Tana holds the position that ein begidin no tentam? And as we've seen in the last few parakim, there is an assumption that the author of a particular Mishnah is the consistent author through the Perek if it is unnamed. So they're going to quote a later Mishnah in our Perek, their parenthetically very famous Mishnah, that indicates that our Tana holds Yesh Begidin Mil Tentam, which is that if you cooked a thigh with the gid in it, if the gid gave off taste, meaning if the shear of the leg is such that the gid gave off its taste into the yarech, the whole leg is asur. And that opens up the door to the whole discussion of Netinatam, which we'll get to in a little while. But the point being that our Tana clearly holds the gidim have tam. Ella hacha bevladot kodshimaskin. So that pushed away our previous answer. So it must be that we're not talking about an animal that you are makdish, but rather an animal that is born of hektesh. Kesavra noy b'shalil, and our Tana must hold that isur gid HaNasheh applies in utero. And he must also hold that animals that are hektesh, that are giving birth, the baby is hektesh inside. Which means that what happens? Isur gidui, isur muktashim adi adadi ka'ati. The two isurim are formed at the same time when the animal is formed inside. But you can't say that because think about it. If the word muktashin in our Mishnah is referring only to one that's in utero, but shalil is discussed about four clauses later in the Mishnah where Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. So obviously muktashin is not about shalil. The answer is that's not such a strong challenge because achi kamar there was a machlok Rabbi Yehuda Rabbanan. It could be that the Mishnah presented muktashin referring to the shalil, and then at the end of the road said it is noig b'shalil, but Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. So you should know that that entire point is challenged by Rabbi Yehuda because he disagrees about shalil. But the other problem is we not said amar tavayu b'hadi adikat. You can't say that halachically the gidim and the animal's kedusha, if it's formed inside, happens simultaneously, because ve'hatanan al elu tumo tanazir megaleach. We have a Mishnah in Nazir that says a Nazir has to shave if he encounters tuma al hamet val kazayit min hamet, whether he has tuma of a full mate or kazayit min hamet. And kashalan, in discussing that Mishnah, we ask the obvious question: a kazayit min hamet megaleach hakula lo shekein. If you have to shave, meaning go through all the Ashram Nazir Tame, etc., for a kazayit, and certainly for a full mate. V'yamar Rabbi Yochanan, how did Rabbi Yochanan explain the Mishnah? Lo nitzucha ela lenefel shlonik shuroi varav bigidin. It must be talking about a miscarriage where the embryo did not yet form all of its tendons. They didn't get tied together. Which tells you, Alma, Isur Muktashim Kadim. That if you hold the position that Muktashim are, the Vladar Kodshim are Bime'iman Miktat Kodshim, that they are Kodoshim in utero, then that means that the Isur Muktashim came before the Isur Gid, and therefore Isur Gid shouldn't apply, because Ein Isur Chalal Isur. So the answer is Avagav, the Isur Muktashim Kadim, at the Isur Gid Chayalai, why Shekin Isur Onoheg Bifnei Noach? That's a tough line. But the suggestion here, and I'll explain it in a second, the suggestion here is that even though Isur Muktashim came first because of what we just mentioned from Nazir, nonetheless, Isur Gid is so severe because it applies beyond the Jewish people, and therefore it will be added on when those are formed. What is the reference to Bnei Noach here? It doesn't mean non-Jews. It means that Yaakov and his children already have the prohibition, or practice the prohibition, of Gid HaNasheh, and they are called Bnei Noach because that's before Matan Torah. Now, Man Shamat Lehi Svara, the only problem is, who is it who holds that this Isur applied before Matan Torah? And we'll see this, excuse me, in a Mishnah at the end of the Perek. It's Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is the one who holds the position that Gid applies to non-kosher animals because it was already prohibited in Yaakov's time. But our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda. Why? As our Mishnah sets out, and as I mentioned when reading it, that it's not a consensus that applies to both right and left leg, and we know that Rabbi Yehuda says it only applies to one, and it's going to be the right one. So the answer is, very simple. Our Tana must agree with Rabbi Yehuda in one issue, which is that it applies to Bnei Noach, and therefore it's more chamur, and therefore it's going to come along and get added on to Muktashin. And he must also hold against Rabbi Yehuda and say that it applies to both right and left, as he presented in the Mishnah. Now, that's still not going to work, because Emer Hashamat Le Rabbi Yehuda B'tmeah. We only know that Rabbi Yehuda says that the Isur Gid is added on to the Isur of a Tmeah, meaning a Chazer, or a camel, or a horse. So the Gid HaNasheh is still Asur, because the Isur Lav is a Lav to eat that, and the Gid is a stronger Lav, because it's early. But Kodshim, the Isur Karet Mishamat Le, but we don't know that Rabbi Yehuda would say that if you have something that's Kodshim, and then Gid came along, as we're positing about the in utero process, that the Gid, which is a Lav, albeit a strong Lav, but still just a Lav, would be strong enough to be added on to something that's already Asur, with a Karet attached to it, which is Kodashim. So we reject his entire approach. We say, Elahachim makera taskina. We're talking about an animal that's giving birth to its first young, a bechor. The berechem kadosh, which becomes sanctified as its birth, which means both kedushat bechor and isur gid come simultaneously. Another way to say it is vadar kodshim v'atanyan kadoshim. That you could take the position that we're talking about, our second answer, which was, it's talking about Vladot Kodashim, and say that we take a different position than the one that Rabbi Yochanan suggested in Nazir, and say that really Vladot Kodashim, or the application from there, and say that they become sanctified on the way out, and therefore, again, the status of Kedusha and the Isra of Gid come simultaneously. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef. When we said that Gid applies to Kodashim, he says it only applies to Kodashim that you eat, meaning the Isra of Gid applies to Shlamim. You have a leg of Shlamim, you have to take the Gid out. But like an Olah, any Isra Gid Nahag Bayan, which means it's can go on the Mizbeach, doesn't have to be taken out. It says it applies to both. Now, Amar Papa Velo Pligi, he says they don't disagree. Kan la halkoto, kan la aloto. Meaning, it does not apply to an Ola to the extent that you would get makot for putting it on the Mizbeach. But it's asur to put on the Mizbeach. In other words, the Gid of an Ola, it's not so clear that that's really a prohibition because it's not being eaten by humans. Therefore, you shouldn't put it up, but if you do, you don't get mako for doing so. Ikadami, there's another version of our Papa's resolution. Our Papa lo pligi kan lo chalso kan lo haloto. One is to cut it out. You don't have to cut the gid out of the leg of an ola, but if it is already separated, then you cannot put it up separately. Now, Nachum Yitzchak disagrees with our Papa, and he says, lo to pligi, they really do disagree, and they disagree about whether you could put it up. As we'll see, the Tanya, and we're going to see, one takes Rabbi's position, one takes Rabbanan's position in this relatively long piece. The Torah, in describing an Olah, says the Kohen burns everything. That means even the bones and the tendons and the horns, karnaim, and the talons. Yachola filu parshu. I might think this is true even if they fell off, that you have to put them up. Tamad lomar, nasita olotecha basar vadam. Your olot are blood and meat, and that's it. I basar vadam yachol yachlot skidim matzamot. So I might think you have to pull them out. Vialle basar ligal mizbeach and take the bones out and put just the meat up there. Tamad lomar, yikintira kohen et hakol hamizbeach. He burns everything at the mizbeach. Haketzad, what's the resolution to this? Mechubarin ya'alu parshu afilu barash hashem mizbeach. Here too, if they're part of the ant inside the flesh, then they go up on the mizbeach. But if they fall out, even if they fall off on top of the mizbeach, you take them down. And that's the position that we're going to find out in a minute is Rebbe. And that's what the machloket is, whether or not if they got separated, if you still keep them up there or put them up there, as we'll see. Man Tana Shamat Leid Amar Parshu Yerdu. Who's the Tana who says that if they fell off, you take them down? Rebbe Yidat Tanya. Here we go. Tirakon Takole Abot Tatsom Vagidim Akanaim Tafaim. Same thing. Vafilu Parshu. Even if they fell off, you still put them up. So the pasuk in Dvarim that says it's only blood and flesh. That's Bepokin. That's Pokin. If you remember from Zvachim, if they pop off the Mizbeach, then you don't put them up if it's bones or something. Haketzad, ikule basar tamachzir, via tamachzir, ikule diyidim atzamot. If you have meat that already got a little bit devoured, and it fell off, you put it back. Remember, we had a shear, how devoured. But if you have bones or gidim, they fall off, you don't put them back. But, according to this position, if they got separated, you keep them up there, or you put them up there. And that would be the position, laha'aloto, of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Omer, Rabbi disagrees with that position. Katubachalam Rabbi Terakon etakol. Riba. This is not a classic Riba Umiyot. He's just saying that pasuk says you should put everything up. It's expansive. Katuba Chanomer Basito Tachabasar Adam Miyet says only meat and blood. Haketzad. What's the resolution? Mechubarin Yalu Pershu Afilu Rosh Hashem Mizbeach. You do exactly like we had in the previous Brayta, which is why they say that Brayta is authored by Rebbe. Okay, and therefore, the machloket that Rachma Yitzchak points to is basically Rebbe versus Rabbanan. If they're separated, do you still put them up? Rabbi Yochanan says you don't, and Rabbi Yosef says you do. Now, Rabbanan, mechubarin lo yitztoyech kral rabuye. I don't need a pasuk to tell me to put stuff up. that's connected to the animal, I must need the pasuk to tell me that even if it's separated, I put it up. It pops down, I don't put it back up. Just like the Torah says, you put the whole head of the olah up, and the head includes bones and other things that you wouldn't normally put up. You put it all up, so clearly, if it's mechubar to the meat, it goes up. But he says, what's the pasuk for? The pasuk hakol is there to tell me, even if they separated, that they go up. For Rebbe, who says if they separated, they don't go up, these bones, etc., says, mechubarim da tera lo yitzarach kral rebuya. You know why you didn't need, you don't need a pasuk to tell me that if there's something that's connected to the animal that's itself mutar, like bones, bones are not asur, that it goes up. That you don't need a pasuk for. Kitzarach kral, what do we need the pasuk for? The gidan hasheb mechubar. So he says the entire pasuk, the word hakol is there to tell you, you put everything up, even the gid. Rabbanan say Mashke Yisrael. That I get from the famous pasuk in Yechezkel that says you have to offer from that which Am Yisrael drinks. Meaning you can only put stuff up. Mina mutar li Yisrael. Only if a Jew can eat it, can go on the mizbeach. Rabbi says, wait a second. Mina bechelu v'dam. What are you talking about? You put fats and blood on the mizbeach. We can't eat that. Like, that's probably why we can't eat it. Rabbanan says mitzvatam b'chach shani. Yeah, that's because the Torah says put it on the mizbeach. That's the mitzvah of chelav adam. But Mashke Yisrael already tells me that anything that I'm not told expressly to put on the mizbeach can't go on the mizbeach unless it's something I could eat. And therefore, the pasuk must be there to tell me that afilu pershu hakol is there to tell me afilu pershu it goes up, but paku not. And Rabbi Yochanan says, no, parshu, they go down, which is Rabbi's position. Okay, Amar Vuna, Gidan Hashesh shall Ola Chotzol Tapuach. If you have an Ola, here that's the problem we just dealt with, you go up to the top of the Mizbeach, you then cut it out up there and throw it on the Tapuach, that big pile of ash in the middle. Amar Rav Chista, Midi Maridachi, who's saying such a thing? Mikti Valken L'Chal Mizbeach. The Torah doesn't say the altar can't eat the Gidan Asher, Alken Lechol B'nei Yisrael Ktiv, people eating. So what's Rav Huna's answer? Mimashke Yisrael, Minam Mutar Li Yisrael. He says, no, you have to take it off because nothing can go on the Mizbeach that I can't eat. Meitavei, watch this challenge, Gidan Asher Shel Shlamim Mechabdo Lama. If you have a Shlamim, what you're going to eat, you take the Gidan Asher out and throw it down the trench that runs through the Azara. Shel Ola, what do you do with a Gidan Asher Ola? Chotzol Atap, you take it up to the Mizbeach. My la maleu maktiro doesn't mean you take it up and burn it there like the rest of the korban. Lo maleu v'chotso. No, you take it up and up there you disengage it. So if the case is you're going to take it up to the on top and then up on top you're going to disconnect it, so why take it up at all? Why not just disconnect it down below?
The famous pasuk in Malachi and his diatribe against people bringing inappropriate offerings to Hashem, in which he says, offer something like this to your governor, Ayur Tzacha, Yusuf Anacha, will he accept it, will he favor you? And it goes on, Arun Ochelish, Bedro Zachar, very strong statement, point being that you don't want to bring something up to God that's not nice, that's not mechubad, and as a result of that, you don't want to bring it up, cut open. We have a bright to supporting Rav Huna's position. Gidan Hashesh Shel Shlamim Mechabdo La'ama V'Shel Ola Chotzo La'Tapuach. So the Gidan Hashesh Shlamim, as we saw earlier, you cut it out and you have it go down the Ama, but of an Ola, it goes up on top and it's cut out and then put on the Tapuach. And as long as we talk about the Tapuach, we have an interesting tangent here. Tlan Hatam, we have a Mishnah in Masechet Tamid. Tapuach Haya Be'emtza HaMizbeach. So the tapuach, which is this big pile of ash in the middle of the mizbeach, sometimes had as much as 300 kor of ash, which is a huge amount. Amarava guzmas. Rava says that's an exaggeration. And now in Masechet Tamid, Ishkur Tatamid Bechos Shazahav, they used to give the korban tamid before shchita, they would give it water to soften it up, make it easier to do shchita. They used to use a gold cup to give the water. Amarava Guzman, Rav again comments and says, wasn't really gold, this is a Guzman. And now more about Guzman. Amarabi Ami, Dibra Torah Lashon Havai. The Torah itself engages in hyperbole. Dibru Nevi'im Dibra Lashon Havai. The Nevi'im engage in hyperbole. Dibru Chachayim Lashon Havai. You also find in Mishneic and Breita literature, hyperbole. And now let's see what we mean. Dibur chachamim lashon havai hadamran. So the examples we saw of the tapuach and of the tamid, we're going to see one more example. Dibur Torah lashon havai, where is that in the Torah? In Moshe's introduction at the beginning of the Devarim, where he gives the historic background, including the words of the scouts, he describes them as saying that we saw Arim Gdolot uvitzurot bashamayim, cities that were fortressed all the way up to heaven, which of course is an exaggeration. Dibur Nevi'im lashon havai, in the story of the coronation of Adoniyahu at the beginning of Sefer Malachim, it says there was so much noise, Vatibaka ha'aretz lekolam, the land split open because of all the sound. So there's three places where Chachamim used hyperbole. And in Tapuach, that we saw, Geffen, we'll hear about that, and Parochet. Tapuach, what's that? Hadamran, we said that. Geffen, what's the Geffen? Ditnan, we have in Masachet Midot, Geffen shel zahav hayta omedet al pitcho shel heichal. There was a golden vine that was fashioned that sat in front of the door of the Beit HaMikdash. Mudlah gabei kunsot, was hanging on beams. V'chomish haya mitnadei gargir or eshkol, maybe the Torah Rabbah. If somebody wanted to donate some grapes, they would hang it on there. Amar Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Tzadok, Masah haya v'nimnu ala ashtosh ver kohanim lefanota. They had to move it, and they needed 300 kohanim to move it. Notice again, the number 300 seems to be used here as the typological number for Guzma. And this, we understand to be also Guzma. It didn't take 300 kohanim to move it, just a lot of kohanim. Parochet, none. Shmi Gamliel Omer, in describing the parochet, and this is a Mishnah, Masachet Shkalim, Omer Mishum Rabbi Shimon Hasgan, so he has now testimony going back to the Mikdash, Parochet ovya tefach. It was one tefach thick. V'al shivim ushnayim nirim neareget. It was woven on 72 weaving looms. V'al kol nima v'nima asurim v'arba achutin. Each one had 24 threads. Or ka'arbaim ba'ama v'rochba asurim ba'ama. It was 20 by 40 amot big. It's huge. Mishmonim ushtei ribon naseit. It was a total of 802,000 strings, ushtaim osim ashana, they would make two of them every year, ushtosh miot kohanim matbilinota, took 300 kohanim to take it and put it into the mikvah. Again, the 300, that last item, being as another example of a guzma, v'lashon havai. So we'll pause at this point, and we'll pick up in the next podcast, in Daf Tzadi Amud Bet, as we examine the issue of the Gidan Asher, in applying to both legs, and the Shalil, etc. Meantime, we should have a wonderful day.